This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 56, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And please check out my other podcast, it's called Past Lives Podcast, and it looks into evidence of the afterlife. If you want to hear the extra 25 minutes of this interview, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign. If you like this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to Stephen Bassett about Disclosure and the Paradigm Research Group. Stephen is a political activist. He made history in 1996 when he registered to lobby the US government regarding its policy of withholding the truth of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. Over the past 25 years, he has lectured around the world and given over 1,200 radio and television interviews about the implications of disclosure. In 2013, he produced the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, also at the National Press Club, a mock congressional hearing over 5 days with 6 former members of Congress and 42 witnesses from 10 countries. His organization, Paradigm Research Group, is located in the National Press Building, 2 blocks from the White House. Well, hi, Steve. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure, Simon.
I wanted to talk to you about all the work you've done with the Paradigm Research Group. And first of all, I wanted to ask you about your work that you did with the Program for Extraordinary Experience Research. Was that for John Mack?
Yes, that was a long time ago. That's how I got involved in this issue formally. It was January of 1996, 26 years ago. I made a decision that I wanted to get involved in not commercial stuff. I wanted to get involved in activism or something other than just making money. So I've been interested in the issue since I was a kid. I'd followed it. And in the 90s, things were starting to get interesting. I read a couple of key books. John Mack's book, Abduction, was one of them. There were several others. But that book really got my attention because he was a brilliant psychiatrist, head of the psychiatric hospital for Harvard. And he had written a Pulitzer Prize winning book about T.E. Lawrence called The Prince of Our Disorder. And here he was studying contactees in an organization that he set up in Cambridge called the Program for Extraordinary Experience Research. So I read this book and I got all excited, and there was an address and phone number in the back of it for the organization. And I'm in San Luis Obispo, California. So I called it up and I chatted with them, and somehow or another, I persuaded them to let me come and volunteer for them as a development person because I'd been involved in business development and things like that. I don't know what I said or did, but they agreed. They never met me. But I did know one thing that at that point in life, which I wish I had known and understood sooner when I was a young man, is that there's almost nothing you can't get involved in if you're willing to volunteer. If you're looking for a paycheck, you've narrowed your options down 95%. So I went out there and I spent 4 months. And it was really exciting, very interesting. It wasn't a fit for me, but it was while I was in Cambridge, sitting in my office up there, I realized what my path would be. I lived in the Washington area off and on my entire life. I knew it pretty well. I had family there. And I realized a very simple truth, that the problem with the government of the United States, or any government, acknowledging to the people, the citizens, that this phenomena was non-human, it was extraterrestrial, or certainly was non-human technology, was not science. There had been more than enough proof gathered over the decades, more than enough to prove that it was not human technology many times over. The problem was political. It was a political problem. So you could pile research on top of research for years. It wasn't going to make any difference. It was a political problem because it was a national security decision made all the way back in 1947 to 1953. That's when they formulated this policy. So if you want to get the truth about their extraterrestrial reality into the public domain, you've got to solve that problem. You've got to end the truth, what I call the truth embargo. And so I said, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. So I went back to the DC area. I had a place to stay. And I registered as a lobbyist on this issue, knowing that I would be the first person to ever do that, as a statement that this issue now is going to be engaged politically, at least in that way. And sure enough, the Washington Post thought that was interesting, came out and interviewed me, put a big interview on the front page of the business section of the Washington Post. And my career as a political activist on this issue was launched 26 years ago, 25.
And do you think over time that people in government are changing their opinion? Because there's a...
Oh, yes.
There's a saying, isn't there, that science moves forward one funeral at a time. Perhaps, you know, the older generation in the government, they have to retire or just get out of the way so the younger people who are more open-minded can be more open about this.
Yeah, that's a phrase I've never heard that phrase. The one I'm familiar with is that airplane safety moves forward one funeral at a time. History is filled with paradigm shifts of enormous magnitude, and they're not easy. One of the most well-known examples is that the Catholic Church in Europe in the 1600s, 1500s, made a determination that they were going to block scientific developments in astronomy. They saw them as a threat to the Catholic faith. And they did. They basically suppressed, or at least refused to acknowledge these advances for about 200 years. And they were serious about it. There were people that were killed. Others were harmed in other ways. And that's probably the closest equivalent to the truth embargo that we have gone through in our time since 1947. And the reason it's similar is that, and I've been making this point relentlessly of late, is that the U.S. government and a number of other governments have known that this phenomena is non-human, almost certainly extraterrestrial, going all the way back to the 40s, 75 years. They've known it. People within these governments who were in a position to deal with the issue have known this, and yet they've denied it. Right? Same thing with the Catholic Church. There were certainly individuals within the Catholic Church, within the Vatican, that knew full well the situation in terms of what was being discovered by scientific efforts. But they refused to accept it. And so in a sense, it was an embargo. They were embargoing the truth about the Earth's role in position in a solar system, the nature of stars and so forth, from the people. In service to, in their case, the faith, Catholic faith, Catholic dogma. In the case of the modern truth embargo, it was in service to national security, because our government and our allies as well felt that that information would be very disruptive in general at a time when, again, remember, this starts in 47, the U.S., the U.K., and other nations were aware that the Soviet Union was likely going to become a serious threat, and that the age of the nuclear weapon was dawning, that the U.S. had them and was using them, and the Soviet Union was going to build their own. All of this was known. And so from their point of view, this was not the best time for the world to learn that, oh, by the way, there's other civilizations out there and they're visiting us. So there's a very similar. Now that the Catholic Church suppressed it for about 200 years. We're now in our 75th year So as things go, this is not an inordinate amount of time, but it has been a long time. But I believe that this embargo, by the way, I kind of, some people think that the end of the Catholic Church's embargo on the astronomy that they saw as dangerous ended, and I forget the year, but they actually allowed the first book on the subject to be in the Catholic Library, Vatican Library. And they approved it, okay? And that kind of marked the end. So we're in the 75th year of the truth embargo that was started in 47, solidified in 53. I believe it's going to end this year. I've been optimistic before, but nothing like now. I think the information is going to be confirmed this year by the President of the United States, most likely. And that will be the disclosure event, capital D, in which this confirmation takes place. And then we enter the post-disclosure world. So if I'm correct in that, 2023 will go down in history as one of the most significant years in all of human history. So I'm excited about that. And I invite other people to start paying attention because it's going to be quite a year.
And do you have connections in government? People, you're not allowed to use their name, but they pass you little bits of information now and then?
Not really. I don't operate that way. There are plenty of journalists, high-end journalists working for the New York Times, Washington Post, and other papers who have inside sources. They all do. In order to cover the national security structures, you have to have inside sources that you trust, that your editors are aware of and know who they are. And they know that they're legitimate. They can give you information that you can then provide to the public, but without naming the sources. We've come to accept this as part is necessary for us to get some sort of information about what is going on. And so these sources provide information. Articles are written, and in most cases, they cannot name the sources, but it's understood that they are legitimate. That doesn't upset me that much. So the journalists have those kind of sources. Activists, not so much. There's a lot of reasons for that. So what I do have is a couple. I have a couple of people that over the years who, what I would consider to be pretty well connected, but not deep throats or anything like that, who have given the odd information. But I operate in a very transparent way. I've always been that way. I do not encrypt. Well, I have Signal now, but mostly because there are some people that do like to use it. But for most of the 26, I don't encrypt. I don't hide. I'm very straightforward. I want the government to know everything I'm doing. That reduces the paranoia. But I've had a couple of tips over the years, but not any startling. Now, I know people that know have sources inside. Okay. Which is not quite the same thing. And over the years, people like that have made some extraordinary statements that have come from government sources. Many of those have been true. But what we need is full transparent. Well, what we need is a fully transparent disclosure event where the president says, yes, there's extraterrestrial presence here. And that's what we're going to get.
Do you feel that over the decades, there's been a standard process whenever there's a new president coming in, at some point they get a briefing on UFOs? Or do you think they view the president as a temporary civil servant?
That is something to be, the history will sort out. First of all, we try to use the word UAP now, not UFO. There's a good reason for that. It doesn't have the stigma, makes it easier for the politicians and journalists to engage the issue without having that stigma attached. Means exactly the same thing, okay? No disrespect intended for those that stick in with UFO, but UAP is the language that we're using going forward. I have come, my again, we don't know this because, again, this issue is embargoed, but I believe that every single president has known the phenomena was real and not human. That doesn't mean that every single president had the same amount of information, but they sort of knew. Now, without question, Truman and Eisenhower were pretty well briefed on this and endorsed the truth embargo, went along with it, and so forth. As you move past Eisenhower, it becomes much murkier. But ultimately, I believe they knew. Now, how they knew and what they knew varied. In some cases, say George H.W. Bush was probably well aware of it throughout most of his career. When he was president, he might have gotten some briefing. Jimmy Carter, no. So it just varies. But one way or another, they knew. And they were, you know, you don't have to get a briefing from the Department of Defense about the history of this issue to know that this phenomena is not human. You could be tipped off any number of ways. If you are a powerful person, ultimately going to become president, and then you become president, the number of people that are willing to take you aside and say, Mr. President or Senator or whatever, look, I'm not able to, or I don't have the classified information, but you should know that that phenomena that obviously has been discussed and is going on all the time, that's not human. Now, so I believe that. This idea that you can just keep a president or a person who has a long political career completely in the dark and a phenomenon that's going on all the time, being written about and being reported all the time is ludicrous. What is varied is what they're willing to do about it. And by and large, all of the presidents, one way or another, have chosen not to challenge that political policy, that national security policy of non-disclosure. They've pretty much gone along with it. Now, there have been some periods there when some effort was made. Jimmy Carter made some effort. Bill Clinton's administration made some effort, but not many. Ultimately, they went along with the fact this is an embargo for a national security reason and in the best interest of the United States. Now, that has changed. That's no longer where we're at. We still don't know what President Biden thinks about this. I know he's aware of it, but he's keeping quite silent about this, and I think I know why. And if things go the way I expect this year, he will be the disclosure president. He will be the first head of state to confirm that this is not human technology. And one of the reasons I think he's staying quiet is that he is correctly trying to avoid this process that's underway to be politicized. It needs to be as least partisan as possible. This is not a political event. This is transcends politics. So he's kind of staying in the background, which is appropriate. But meanwhile, all kinds of things are happening within the U.S. Congress and over at the Department of Defense here in the U.S.
When it comes to President Carter, I think he said, didn't he, that if he would release UFO information when he got into office, and then nothing happened?
Not exactly. What happened was Jimmy Carter, who was probably the most honest man to ever set foot in the White House, he had a sighting while he was governor. He reported it to a couple of, I think it ended up getting reported to a couple of the civilian organizations that take these reports. Not a big deal. Not a hugely significant sighting, but he saw something. Others were with him at the time saw it. But that came up during the campaign, not surprisingly. And when it came up in the campaign and he was asked, he said that he would look into it. Well, the moment he said that, he started getting letters, which continued right up until the point that he went into the White House. He was getting letters, several thousands of them, from people saying, yes, look into it. We want to know. Tell us. And Jimmy Carter, God bless him, said, okay, I'm going to look into it. And so he started to try to set up a study, an investigation, something into the issue. Now, there was no chance that was going to go anywhere. But he was the president. And so He approached NASA. He approached his then initially his the director of the CIA, George H.W. Bush, and nobody wanted to cooperate. This was way too soon. There was no way that the national security structures were going to allow the truth embargo to end in 1977, 78. We were still deep in the Cold War. So it wasn't going to happen. And so but because he did try to do something, and you just can't tell a president to go away and leave you alone, a report was sort of done. They did a little report was put together without a lot of cooperation, though. And it was called the UFO Enigma, and it was published by Marcia Smith. And so that was pretty much it. And then he just dropped it. It is said that he was pretty upset that the parts of his government wanted nothing to do with it and wasn't going to help him. I mean, that's a slap in the face to a man that has just become the most powerful head of state in the world. And it upset him a lot, but he made perhaps the wise decision. Look, there's other things to deal with, and let it go. So that's what happened in the case of Jimmy Carter. He was asked occasionally over the years since about it, and he doesn't have much to say. He doesn't want to go there. I appreciate that. So that's what happened with Jimmy Carter in 1977. But it did something important. I mean, it did raise some eyebrows, and it created some butterfly effects. One of the things that it generated was that is when Danny Sheehan, the attorney and legal activist Danny Sheehan, was brought into this issue. He got attached to this issue because of the Jimmy Carter report. He was brought in as part of the, quote, the study they were going to try to do, which I think at the time, I don't think they could have had any idea just how impossible that was going to be. But they didn't know. I don't think Carter realized just how intense the truth embargo was. I think Danny Sheehan was bought in to approach the Vatican in terms of maybe getting some information from the Vatican, which they felt they very well have had. And Danny did approach the Vatican, and the Vatican told him, not on your life. We're going to give you anything. But it brought Danny into the issue, and he went silent about it for the next 23 years as he pursued many other projects. He's one of the great legal activists of the 20th century. But he never left the issue intellectually, and in the year 2000, he jumped back in, and he's been in it ever since. And Danny and I are involved in some joint projects and stuff, and you're going to be hearing a lot more from Danny Sheehan very soon. But so that was a positive thing that emerged from Jimmy's efforts. A much more intense effort to engage this issue occurred on the Clinton administration, starting in 93, essentially 16 years after Jimmy Carter made his efforts. And Jimmy is still with him. One of the things I really hope happens, well, one of the reasons why if disclosure happens this year is going to be thrilling for me, many reasons. One of them is Jimmy Carter is still alive. And the idea that he lived to see the culmination of the resolution of this issue finally, that he stepped into all those years ago, right, is just very cool. I think he will be really thrilled that this has finally been resolved and he lived to see it, because he deserves it. The man's one of the most righteous people that ever sat in the Oval Office, and would be very pleasing to me if he lives to see this happen.
Do you think he came up against officials that thought the whole thing of UFOs, UAPs was just a joke?
No, he came up against the Department of Defense that knew it was true. In other words, the reason the truth embargo and the reason that the government acts the way it does is not because it's a joke, but because they have known it is extraterrestrial since no later than 1947. In other words, the truth embargo is a serious policy. Now, in order to maintain the truth embargo, in order to keep it going, they have had to do their part in making it a joke, in making it stigmatizing it. so that people would stay away from it. Journalists would stay away, academics and so forth. And so, yeah, they service the idea that it was a joke, but I assure you, they don't think it's a joke.
Do you think there may be compartmentalization? I think that's the word, in government and military, where some group of guys in the military, they have a whole load of information. They're not telling anyone. And then somebody somewhere else has another load of information. They're not telling anyone. And so this stuff never comes together. Nobody gets the big picture.
But not exactly. Look, it is compartmentalized. In the insiders, like they often use the word stove piping, meaning there's a whole bunch of different pipes. And you know, the smoke goes through one or the other or whatever. It's isolated from the other. Yeah, compartmentalizing is a very important part of the national security operations. So it works. And then you add deep classification. So say you've got deep classification, you've got special access programs where you have to have a security clearance and you have to have a special access to get in them at all. And then on top of that, you've got what are called unacknowledged special access programs, where one, you have to have a security clearance. Two, you also have to have a special access. And three, you're not allowed to say anything to anybody. Right? In other words, the program doesn't exist. That's a different thing. It's one thing to be involved in a secret program that is known, but secret, and you can't get information without the special access. It's another thing to be involved in a program that is not only secret and classified, but is unacknowledged. In other words, as far as anybody's concerned, there is no program at all. So you've got, and then you add the compartmentalization in, and you can see how you could be studying, researching, cataloging, whatever, this phenomenon and the actions of these extraterrestrials, which has been nonstop, certainly in the modern era, and may very well have occurred to one degree or another going back thousands of years. You can see how you can keep it under wraps. You can keep it contained. They've used all the skills that they developed in building the intelligence complexes that were needed in World War I, World War II, plus using all the technology that exploded on the scene after World War II to service this embargo. It is an extraordinary accomplishment that 75 years after Roswell, the policy of the U.S. government is still basically, at this point, has only gotten to the point where it's willing to say that this thing, whatever it is real, but we don't know what it is yet. It's remarkable. They managed to pull it off. But while it was a remarkable accomplishment, it's over. They can't do it anymore. The policy is collapsing. They know it. And so they're going to have to accommodate the reality that people are going to get to know the truth here pretty soon. And they're doing all the things you would expect to, have it go as smoothly as possible and everybody to look as righteous as possible. In other words, there's no reason that this has to go badly, right? We can finally tell the truth and do it in a way that people respect what we're doing. But there's still going to be a lot of fallout and there's going to be a lot of negativity, because when you lie to the entire nation for 75 years about something of this magnitude, it irritates people. There's a lot of people not happy about it. And so there's going to be some downside and some nastiness. But overall, they're going about it in a way, they're ending this thing in a way which I'm happy with. Some people just say, no, we want you to walk out in front of the cameras, tell us the truth, bring all the files with you, put them out in the White House lawn. We want to go through them right now. There are people, like, I get it. They're frustrated, and I don't blame them. But the process underway right now is the way it needs to happen, but it needs to be done quickly. They can't stretch this out. That's no longer an option. And they're moving at a pace which is acceptable. I believe we would have already had disclosure sooner than now if it weren't for some extraordinary world developments, which is always a problem. The pandemic is a hugely disruptive event, a black swan event, that was inevitable, but who knew when? And it just actually made everything difficult. And then you had an extraordinary level of political chaos in the United States. Not that we haven't had that before, but it reached rather impressive proportions. Big distraction. And then you had not that this hasn't happened before, but what happened in Ukraine, what's going on with Russia and Ukraine and Putin is very concerning. There's a great deal of talk about the risk of nuclear weapons being used and things like that. That's a big deal. And so that's going to be disruptive if you're trying to affect extraordinary policy changes. So, but in spite of all of those three things, and the war in Ukraine is still going on, the pandemic is still going on, and the political chaos is still going on, right? Just watch the news. In spite of that, this process moving towards a formal acknowledgement of the ET presence is moving along pretty fast. And so that's impressive to me. And another reason why I'm optimistic this could be the year.
Do you think that over time they have had a sort of a drip feed disclosure, just little bits every now and then, maybe if they're testing the waters?
I don't. There may have been a little of that, but I don't think the government needed to institute a drip feed, because the huge public effort by citizen scientists, citizen researchers, citizen journalists, and so forth to investigate it on their own, to try to get information out on their own, was plenty of drip feed. Right? The government didn't need a drip feed. The public was doing it for them, creating, the research, books, reports, organizations, eventually websites, and eventually podcasts. The public has refused to step down on this. It's not been an easy road for those that wanted to take this on, but they did. And so the public was constantly providing information that, if you would look at it objectively, would show that there's something profound happening here. But the truth embargo was so effective in ghettoizing the people and the research and activities and the organizations going on that they weren't able to break the truth embargo, but they've certainly kept things moving forward. That doesn't mean the government may not have dropped something in there at some point, but I doubt that was the policy. Not that there aren't some strategies going on. They've been strategizing how this would end for some time. They have a lot of ideas about it. This is what's going on now is not a surprise to the Pentagon or to the intelligence services. They knew full well this day would come, and they have actually researched and gamed it out ahead of time to see how it might go and how they would deal with it.
And I wonder if they've made little mistakes then instead of drip feeding. Because I remember hearing Colonel Holt from Rendlesham, and he was talking about when his book was being published, he passed it over to the Air Force for clearance, and they basically said, oh yeah, no problem, just put your book out.
That could be part of a grand strategy to allow a little out here and allow a little out there. But it's more likely simply that what was in the book did not violate the law, didn't violate his clearances, didn't violate the situation. And so they said yes. Remember, the government and the military intelligence community is a huge, vast complex. It's not monolithic. And so at any given time, one part of this huge complex might do something or agree to something. That doesn't mean that there's a grand strategy there. It just means that there's so much, many moving parts that in and of itself is going to allow the thing to move forward. The truth embargo is profound in many ways, but the fact that it was able to succeed in spite of how many entities there are involved in this, all the military services, all the intelligence agencies, a lot of technology entities are aware of this. And so with so many moving parts, obviously something is going to come out here and something is going to come out there. But they managed to maintain enough of a control over the public perception that whatever did come out would not break the embargo. So I look at it that way. I don't see a grand strategy of leaks. Now, does that mean there aren't some people have worked in our government who personally objected to this policy and may have done something on their own to help? And one example of this, which I happen to feel was legit, not others do, but I have confidence in it, was the microfiche with the photos of documents that was suddenly turned up in the mailbox. I think it was James Chandray, that became the MJ-12 documents. Whether or not there may be a bogus document in there, but I believe that most of those documents are legitimate. And this may be a classic example of somebody who, on their own, anonymously gets those files and leaks them to some researchers. That's not a government policy. That is an individual who's saying, you know, I'm going to do what I can here, but I'm going to be careful. I'm not going to lose my job. I think that's happened a number of times because there are plenty of people that have worked in the Pentagon, worked in the military services and elsewhere within our government over the last seven decades who personally felt the truth embargo was the wrong thing to do, that the people should be told the truth. Most of the people that work in government are very nice people. They're very good people. You know, demonizing them, it doesn't help at all. But when you're talking national security policy at the level of that the ET issue is treated, which is high or higher than our nuclear war policies and so forth, this is serious stuff. So what you personally believe is not important. What is the policy? So over the years, though, I think the number of people inside who personally supported ending this truth embargo has grown. And I think that's why you had a group of people who all had careers within the military intelligence community come forward as private citizens in 2017. As part of an organization that was saying it was going to research and bring information to the people. And I'm referring to what was then called the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. So that's one way to look at it, right? And once they came forward and things continued to move ahead, and didn't seem to be too many recriminations, I think a lot of other people started coming forward in various ways, which is part of the reason why this policy of embargo may very well end in 2023.
Do you have any particular signposts that you're looking for or that have passed to show that disclosure could be this year?
Oh, yeah. Lord, I'm going to try to give you a short answer.
Right.
More has happened in the last 4 years regarding this policy of embargo and regarding in government engagement of it than in the previous 75. It's just been unprecedented. So without going through all of it, let's just simply say that what we see now is the Congress has received a lot of behind the scenes briefings. Many members of Congress, particularly in the important committees, the defense committees, intelligence committees, so forth. They've been briefed. As a result, they created legislation calling on the Department of Defense to respond in various ways. The Department of Defense did that. Then they created some more legislation. This legislation comes out in what in the U.S. we call our National Defense Appropriation Act, which includes in it the intelligence appropriations or authorization act. And the language is extraordinary. And you can find it. Just Google the FY23 NDAA, and you can see the bill, literally read the bill that was just passed, signed by the president, I think on December 23, has extraordinary language in it. Meanwhile, the DOD has been setting up a very substantial, what we call interagency group, involving several dozen entities, including the military services. That's all being set up. And again, all of this is unprecedented. And so this is just a couple of the reasons why we're moving quickly forward on this. Meanwhile, the media coverage, high-end top media coverage, is intensified to unprecedented levels. The skeptics have pretty much left the field. There's almost no serious skeptics now. There's some still active on Twitter, but overall, very few people are trying to put out a counter narrative at a high level. The Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all the major papers are basically now treating it very seriously and publishing lots of articles. On my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org, or Google Stephen Bassett, it comes up. I have a print media archive under resources with now 13,000 articles. Linked, you can go read them all. Some of the links are dead, but I do have copies and I'll try to repair those. It's a big job. But in the last couple of years, I think I've logged in like 4,000 articles. This is triaged high-end media. This is not anything out there. This is serious professional journalism, right? 4,000 articles. So the media coverage expanded dramatically. And now more and more people are speaking out without concern for any consequences. Members of Congress and others. These are just a few of the signposts that we're at the end game here. We're approaching the finish line.
Do you think the fact that there are some people with influence who are quite religious who think that UFOs are demonic, do you think that could cause a problem?
Now, occasionally it turns up for some people who think that they're in a very, very small minority. There's 8 billion people on the planet. There's a lot of worldviews. That interpretation of phenomena does not pose. It may have in the past. I don't think so. But it may have. But it doesn't impose a threat to the process underway. Probably the most notable thing that one should know about with respect to the religious issue is that one of the largest faiths in the world, the Catholic Church, which is representing 1 billion+ people, has made it quite clear that they're quite comfortable with the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and it's going to be just fine. Now, the Catholic Church has known about the ET presence forever. A Catholic Church may have known about the ET presence in the 1600s. But they have chosen to sit on it too. All right. Is it an embargo? It's sort of. It's not an active embargo. They actively were aggressive during the time of Galileo and so forth with respect to challenging the science. With respect to the ET issue, the Catholic Church just chose to sort of remain out of the issue, just stay out of it. But they knew. And I say they, high-level people within the Catholic hierarchy, the Vatican, were aware that that phenomenon was real, that it wasn't human. That doesn't mean there's some Catholics in the Vatican that said, well, yeah, it's real, but it's messengers from God, whatever. No, they knew it was real. And I think they knew it was extraterrestrial entities. And what has happened in the last 25 years is the Catholic Church has made the decision formally to support that hypothesis. So the Catholic Church has made it quite clear that it supports the hypothesis of an extraterrestrial presence. It has made it clear that it does not see that as a threat to the faith. So there you go. So I'm much more impressed with that. And that's going to be much more important to the process than the very small number of people that see demons flying around in the sky. So I wouldn't be concerned about it. As far as the other face, there's no indication that the Muslim religion has a problem with this phenomenon. And there's no indication that the Asian faiths have a problem with this phenomenon. The only segment of the religious world that seems to be troubled is very strong evangelicals. And that's fine. They can have that view. But they just represent a tiny portion of the whole overall world religious structure.
And is Joe Biden a Catholic?
Yeah, Joe Biden's a Catholic. Again, the Catholic. So, I mean, him being a Catholic, I don't think matters in terms of how this will play out in his administration. Not a problem. The religious concern really stems not from religion, but the truth embargo. The people managing the truth embargo used it to help control people's thinking on this. In other words, they were the ones putting out that, oh, this would be very disruptive to religion and religion is going to be upset or maybe there'll be a collapse and all that. That was coming from the truth embargo managers. It was a national security measure. They have lots of ways that they can control or influence how we think about things. So they were creating that issue, not the religious faith.
ETs are in their craft. They're UAPs. They can fly around our skies whenever they want. There's nothing we can do to stop them, it seems.
That's right.
They show themselves to people, but they haven't come forward in a massive kind of disclosure, which might suggest they don't want it. So is there a thought there at all? Do you think that maybe we shouldn't disclose it because they don't want it and we don't know what they'll do if we do do this disclosure?
Well, let me shift your perspective on it. Let's look at it from another point of view. Clearly, the ETs could resolve this matter once and for all, anytime they wanted to. There's this pretty cool moment in the movie Independence Day, the first one, which is a very successful movie. A lot of people watch this movie. When the huge craft flies over, you know, finally just emerges over Washington, D.C., the president walks out on the balcony there and looks up and says, well, I guess the question of whether we're alone or not has been answered. Pretty, though, dramatic and upsetting way for it to happen. The ETs could end at any time, and they haven't. So we know that they are not willing to take very dramatic measures to confirm to the world that they're here. We know that. On the other hand, we know that they still allow themselves to be seen constantly, that they do other things which are certainly not helping them, quote, hide. I love to refer to the crop circles, which are in fact not human made. I mean, there are some that are human made, but there are others that are absolutely not human made. This has been well established. It's kind of old news now. People don't think about it much, but the fact is the crop circles continue to be formed. But as a political activist, I look at them this way. Why would you keep going back to the same fields every year in the same country? In other words, the number of crop circles outside of the UK is few, and most of them are man-made. But in the UK, they keep coming back and doing them over and over again, knowing that every year, more and more people are literally vacationing in the UK during crop circle season to see if they can see some being made, or they can be there when they're made, and there's literally a kind of a thing. And they're bringing better cameras every year. They're bringing ultralights to fly over the fields. They're bringing drones. And they keep coming back and making them. Isn't that interesting? So one of the effects of that is that this is a very cool way to let people know we're here, right? It's non-threatening. It's not particularly destructive. Most of the crop, very, very few of the crop is really lost. It creates, it's almost an art form. And so it's a very cool way to kind of keep reminding people every year, we're still here. Here's some more crop circles. We're still here. This is not trivial. Okay. So they are continuing to support the fact that they're here, but they are stopping short of literally confirming it, forcing political confirmation. Why? I can only guess. One day we'll ask them, but the best answer I can give, and I hope this is the correct answer, is that they see a force majeure type disclosure as being disruptive, destructive, not helpful. And they don't want that. All right? They don't want to upset us. They don't want to fly 2 mile wide ships over cities and scare the hell out of people. They don't want that. There seems to be a way to go about this that they are serving that is less upsetting. That's the best way I can explain it. But there's no question. They choose not to do it. But the idea that they don't want it, that doesn't add up, because if they really don't want disclosure, if they didn't want the public's awareness to keep growing to the point where it becomes a formal policy, they just wouldn't be seen so much. They would take actions that were far more clandestine, but they're not doing that. In fact, there's almost nobody in the planet now that doesn't know what an extraterrestrial means and that hasn't seen movies that have extraterrestrials in them. It's practically a universal understanding now. The only reason it just isn't literally, utterly confirmed worldwide and just a part of our daily lives is that the governments of the world have made a decision that they're not going to acknowledge it yet, whether they be Western democracies or whether they be autocratic governments. They've made the decision that no, we're not going to acknowledge that. So go away. Don't bother us. That's the only reason. It's not the ETs.
And so can you tell us about the Paradigm Research Group and where we find the website?
Well, Paradigm Research Group is my little organization that I set up in 96. It's an activist organization, which has always been a sole proprietorship. In other words, I never made it a nonprofit. Maybe I should have, but I chose not to because it makes it easier to operate and also less vulnerable to, how would you say, bad actors who would like to shut it down. However, very soon, I'm going to convert it from a simple sole proprietorship to a full nonprofit 501(c) and start raising tax deductible money, funding. It will be based in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, hopefully. And the website will remain, but it will be converted and there'll be some changes. And my intention is for it to become what I call a boutique think tank. It will be a think tank, small, designed to provide information from a selected group of advisors and so forth to the government and the press about the issues related to the end of the truth embargo, which is underway now. And then, but more importantly, the post-disclosure era. So that's the future of Paradigm Research Group. It is not a research organization. It is a political activist organization with that name. The name's not going to change. However, I am all involved in a much bigger project that is going to be launched in a few weeks in Los Angeles. That's way bigger than Paradigm Research Group. That announcement's going to happen in about 3 weeks. It's a pretty big deal. It's going to be, I think, exciting, and I think people are going to be excited about it. We hope that they'll participate. So I'm going to be hopefully bi-coastal within a few weeks or so, a month, and I'll be operating from both Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. And I'm not the only
there are plenty of organizations that are gearing up. There are plenty of projects gearing up because I assure you, a lot of people at the highest levels of the film industry, in politics, and so forth, are coming to realize that this is it. It's showtime, and so they're excited and they're making their own plans. I mean, this is a big deal, and so a lot of it is behind the scenes. You don't know about it, but some of it is starting to emerge. You're starting to see it. I'm aware of a number of things that are happening, but there's far more happening than I can be aware of. I just know that there's an explosion of activity and organizational formation and so forth that is building, that's going to break out at any time. Even before the announcement, before confirmation, you're going to see stuff popping up here, there, and everywhere. And this will be reflective of the fact that the stigma on this issue is pretty much almost completely gone. There is almost no risk now to openly engage this issue and say what you want, do what you want. And so it's been building for 75 years. So get ready. I mean, it's going to get really intense, Simon. And your show and all the other hundreds of podcasts and other things that have developed in the last few years are reflective of that. I mean, the reason that you have these shows and you're doing what you're doing probably is because the stigma to address this issue has dropped and the interest has grown. And you're out there doing your thing, and I've got many other colleagues doing the same. This is a big, big deal, and we're only just seeing the beginning of the engagement of this issue on an international, global level, unlike anything the world has ever seen.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been fascinating talking to you.
Thank you, Simon. I've been in the UK many times. I'm looking forward to coming back on a speaking tour, not only the UK, but all of Europe soon. Not planning that now, but I'll eventually start putting that together. So maybe we can share a brew at a local pub. I get out there and look forward to that.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, maybe we'll talk again soon. Maybe it'll be after disclosure.
Who knows? But even before, it's all right. My job, one of the key things I'll be doing going forward, is giving as many interviews as I can to get people the information they need to understand what's happening or participate, what's happening, whatever. That's my job. So, hey, anytime.
And that was an interview with Stephen Bassett about Disclosure and Paradigm Research Group. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, which is about another 25 minutes, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFO podcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you'll get an extended episode every month. If you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 240 episodes. On Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of Past Lives Podcast every Thursday called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the links are in the show notes. My Instagram is Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. The president comes out on the White House lawn and makes the disclosure announcement, there'll be so many people around the planet and say, yeah, we already know. So what else is new?
That's right. That's right. That's right. So that's a good thing. But the reason why the heads of state need to acknowledge this is that in order for us to start really